sure you're in fellowship, rebound if necessary. If not, let's prepare and get on here, continuing. Looking at this matter of the doctrine of the fig tree, we're under major point 5, down to sub point G, the time lapse between the budding of the fig tree and all the events, which include the events that come to pass during the 7 years of Daniel's 70th week and the second advent, is referred to as a generation. The view that genea, the Greek term for generation, refers to the race of Hebrews. Now, this is one of the ways what you find is when there are problematic passages that people don't know how to deal with, they want to start redefining words. And genea, you can't just redefine it to mean something else, but they try to. That's not unusual. That it refers to the race of Hebrews is not supported by grammatical usage. Another Greek term, genos, means stock, kindred, or family. Genea means generation. Genos would be, you know, you could translate it race. But that would just simply say this race will not pass away, i.e. the Jews will not pass away until all this is fulfilled. Well, that's all true enough, but is that what it says? And the answer is no, it does not say that. Two, the view that Jesus was referring to the generation that was present with him at that time has certainly been disproved by subsequent history. There, anyone that wants to hold that this was all fulfilled during the time of the apostles, I mean, you're just an idiot not to hold that view. I don't even know how you could hold that view. I mean, you've got to know some biblical history. Three, the only interpretation which is sound theologically and historically is that the generation that sees the budding of the fig tree will be substantially represented at the second advent. And then four, the phrase right at the door employs the preposition epi and the dative case to indicate the proximity of the event in question and has the sense of right at the threshold. And then five, this would indicate that the sign of the fig tree is quite proximate to the second advent, as opposed to approaching from some distance away. So the fig tree, if it's a sign of anything, well, this has been another argument that one has to consider, is that a sign has to be somewhat proximate to what it's portending. I mean, a sign that's 100 years away doesn't do you any good if you have to make adjustments based on it. And I get the impression, this learn the parable from the fig tree, and when you see the abomination, that these things are essentially things he's telling them, these are things you've got to know because you've got to make adjustments based on this knowledge. This is what you need to know. And why do you need to know it if it's of any no consequence? Well, of course, it's consequential. Well, H, the length of a generation and how one determines it. There are two distinct problems. The first is related to how one dates the beginning of a generation, while the second is related to how long a generation lasts. B, a generation is defined as a segment of society that lived in a certain historical period, and which experienced the defining historical event within that critical period of history. Why do we call it the baby boom generation? Because all the people coming back from war, you know, had a lot of sex and had a lot of kids. That's why it's called that. It's the defining event, we might say, that one could say, well, yeah, that certainly governs these people. This is the event that sums up their history. Well, two, the Exodus generation, when we refer to it regularly, of course, refers to adults from 20 years and up that saw the judgments on Egypt and the great deliverance from its power. Numbers 1, 2, and 3. This is readily documented. Numbers, as you might imagine, gets into this issue of numbering, hence the name. Numbers 1:3, he said, take a census, in verse 2, of all the congregation of the sons of Israel by their families, by their fathers' households, according to the number of names, every male, head by head, from 20 years old and upward. Whoever is able to go out to war, you and Israel shall number them with their armies. Okay, so the Exodus generation consisted, the low end of the Exodus generation are those that are 20 years old and older. That's the low end. So you can't say a person technically who was 15, were they technically a part of the Exodus generation? No, they saw it, but they weren't part of that generation. They were a part of the subsequent generation. That there's a dividing line at some point, whatever that point is. Here, God says that point is 20 years old and up. And he says those people, that Exodus generation. So there you got Numbers 1, 2, and 3, also 32, 13. So the Lord's anger burned against Israel. And he made them wander in the wilderness 40 years until the entire generation of those who had done evil in the sight of the Lord was destroyed. Now, is this why have people limited a generation to 40 years? Because number one, we have a verse that says that. We literally have a verse that says anybody between 20 that lived during that time, anybody that was 20 years old enough, none of that group lived to be 61. Not one of them. They all were dead by 60. Now, some of them died at 20, some of them died at 40, some of them died at 59. But they all died. Everybody 20 and up, the Exodus generation was killed off completely before with two exceptions. Two exceptions, Joshua and Caleb. But that whole generation was taken out. So anybody 20 years old and up. So if you were 19 at that time, guess what? You weren't a part of that generation. You weren't going to get killed. You didn't have to die. That's not to say people that were 19 didn't die. They could have. But it was not a part of God's judgment on that generation because they weren't a part of that generation. This is the generation and this is how it's defined. Until the entire generation of those who had done evil in the sight of the Lord was destroyed. And then Deuteronomy 2, 14 through 16. Now the time it took for us to come from Kadesh Barnea until we crossed the brook Zered was 38 years, until all the generation of the men of war perished from within the camp, as the Lord had sworn to them. And actually, as it turns out, Kadesh Barnea, it was a period from the Exodus of 40 years, but from Kadesh there, it was a period of somewhat less than that. He says a couple of years less. But 38 years is still within the, quote, generation range, is it not? Yes, because if a generation range is 40, 38 is within that. When we see Jesus making this pronouncement to the people, truly, I say to you, this generation will not pass away. And when he's talking about the first Advent generation, until the judgment had fallen and the nation went into exile, dispersion. It was 37 years later, still within the 40-year time frame, though. So there's no problem there. Well, the first Advent generation refers to those that witnessed the ministries of John the Baptist, and more importantly, of course, Jesus Christ. Matthew 11, 16. If you want to limit that, according to a biblical model of those 20 years and old and up, it just means that anybody 20 years old and up was not going to survive 40 years. That 40 years was going to be the maximum they could survive. And in fact, they all died within 37. The ones that fell under that judgment. Well, the fig tree generation will be comprised of those that see the restored temple system. Some, many of whom, will be alive to see the abomination of desolation and the return of Christ. Well, a study of the entire Bible reveals that generations have varied widely in their length. Beginning with the antediluvian generations, which were incredibly long, that means before the flood, before Noah's flood, to the generations recorded in Matthew. And in Matthew, one of the values of a genealogy, well, this is typically boring stuff that people, when they get it, they read over it because they think, oh, well, there's no value here. Oh, there's lots of value in genealogies. Number one, it's going to address this matter of a generation. And number two, it also gives us a perfect record of the line of Christ. So there's that. They're historically valuable. And I'm not going to read this whole thing. But you have this situation where this is broken up in verses 1 through 11 from Abraham to the deportation in Babylon. And then from verse 12 and following, the deportation of Babylon, he goes down to the time of Christ. And then he provides a summary in verse 17. So all the generations from Abraham to David are 14 generations. From David, now that's just what he uses for his deal. He's not saying that that was all there were. Certainly there was way more than that. There were way more than 14 generations. Because Abraham was born in about 1950 B.C. and lived till 1775. And David wasn't born until about 1050 B.C. Or actually, to take it back, David was born in about 1100 B.C. or so. So from Abraham at 1950 down to 1100, well, that's almost 800 years. That's more than 14 generations. At 40 years to a generation, that's only 560 years. So you have to, but he omits generations, and that's clear. When one studies the context, Matthew omits generations. He's doing this in terms of trying to use these numbers to make them all equal, because that's his purpose. He wants to deal with 14 specific generations. Well, gee, because of the unique nature of the pre-flood environment. Now, we won't take that into account, and why? Here's why. Because before the flood, the earth does not exist as it exists in its present state. Before the flood, the earth was about two-thirds land and one-third water, visible. After the flood, those numbers were flip-flopped. And so we have a lot less visible land surface, for one thing. Before the flood, and then they all know this. I mean, science has figured all this out, strangely enough. There was only one landmass. They call it Pangaea. And Pangaea, theoretically this one landmass, was where everybody lived, and they did. But then there came a time after the flood when this landmass was separated. And you can see it. I mean, if you go and do the historical issues with the faults and the fault lines, and you trace this back, you can push South America and all of that, the Western Hemisphere, you can push it back over with Asia, or Europe rather, and you will see that it fits fairly neatly. Why? Well, they were separated at some point. The flood set a lot of things into motion, not the least of which was orogenesis, continental drift, and other factors. There were forces unleashed at this time in history that had a monumental effect on the planet. Well, first, the earth appears to have been upright on its axis prior to whatever hit it. Whatever hit it knocked it cockeyed. So now we see the earth is tilted on its axis. It's not straight the way it should be. And so you have that happen. And of course, you have the destruction of all entire humanity. That happens at the flood. But prior to all of this, there was a vapor canopy that surrounded the earth. And this vapor canopy made the earth one big giant ecosystem that was like a terrarium. And it was very moderate in terms of temperature. It was very constant. Humidity and temperature didn't vary much. There really wouldn't have been much in the way of winds and pressure shifts and gradients and all of this stuff. Weather would have been very uniform prior to the flood. And additionally, this vapor canopy filters out radiation. And so therefore, one of the things we know is that radiation adversely affects anything it touches. There's no healthy radiation. There's no such thing as healthy radiation. And so this filters out a lot of that, and so allowed for a much slower aging process. Because radiation, as we know, is harmful to any organism and eventually, in sufficient quantity, is deadly. So this speeded up when this vapor canopy was dissolved, of course, which happened when this super cold item from deep space, whatever it was, hits this. This has to be fairly heated because this has to remain in a state of vapor. So steam, we might say. So this is incredibly warm up here. This very cold object, something coming in from outer space, could be on the order of absolute zero, hits this. Well, this precipitates this vapor canopy out. It starts to precipitate out because of now you've got all kinds of factors playing, pressure shifts and other factors. Well, for 40 days and 40 nights, it rains out. Now, that's not what flooded the earth. See, people have the idea of 40 days and 40 nights wouldn't have flooded the earth. You're right. It wouldn't. What flooded the earth was that the fountains of the great deep were broken up. There were subterranean caverns of water that were let loose that came gushing forth in these huge tsunamis that swept the planet. Now, the likes of which, again, if you could see a visual of this, you'd be astonished at the things that happened. Then you also had this mass extinction. The dinosaurs went extinct. But the dinosaurs, again, as far as we know, dinosaurs are reptiles. Reptiles have one overriding characteristic. They never achieve a maximum size. No matter how long they live, they constantly grow. That's why you don't find 2-foot pythons. You find 20-foot pythons. I mean, because a reptile just continues to grow all its life. So how big could a lizard get? Pretty big. Pretty darn big. And but still, it's only going to have that little lizard brain. The little lizard brain didn't get any smarter when he grew up. So you have this situation. Some people argue about dinosaurs and all of that. Yeah, they went extinct, though. There's evidence of that. And it was a mass extinction all at once, quick, not ice age type. Let's just stand here until we freeze to death. You know, it seems like it's getting colder. What do you think? You know, no, it didn't happen that way. It happened at the flood. So a lot of things happened. But the important thing was people were aging much more slowly because of this environment. That's biblically documented, by the way. You can pretty well teach this straight out of Genesis 1. So the pre-flood environment and the very lengthy generations that characterized that until the life expectancy of mankind stabilized, that time will not be considered in this matter of what constitutes a normal generation. Why? Well, because a human lifespan was 800 to 900 years then. Well, that skews your figures. Any statistical sample has to be taken based on a statistical average, not on what we know are skewed figures. You wouldn't include that in your data if you're a good statistician. You know what data to eliminate. And see, this is what the problem is with numbers. You can take the numbers and make them say anything if you know how to manipulate the data, and there are people that are good at manipulating data. Hey, wait a second. We're really on an upswing. Home sales have increased. Compared to what? Home values are up. Compared to what? Not to what they were at the height of the insanity. They're not up that high. Well, you know what to eliminate. Well, in this study, you have to eliminate that, I believe, because it will skew your data. H, the next specific reference to a generation is found in the promise of Abram, which indicated that sometime in the fourth generation in the future, his descendants would return to Canaan following their captivity. Genesis 15:16. And this is an intriguing prophecy in that it does a couple of things for us. And it's largely been misinterpreted, but again, in many ways, the verse itself has not even been translated right. But that's another part of the problem. And when you're reading an English version, if it isn't translated right, it's of no value. And they've certainly messed up the translation in Genesis 15:13. But here's the key verse. As for you, verse 15, you shall go to your fathers in peace. In other words, you're going to live to an old age and you're going to die and everything's going to be fine. You're going to die and go to heaven, as it were. Then, in the fourth generation, they will return here. For the iniquity of the Amorite is not yet complete. Okay, so we have some idea. I mean, we have the genealogy of Abraham, so we know that when he's talking to Abraham, we know the next generation from Abram is going to be Isaac. And then we know the next generation is going to be Jacob. Then we know the next generation is going to be Joseph. That's his son. Then there's going to be a couple of generations in here and that are going to culminate down here in Moses. Okay? So, here's the question then. You have this promise here of, and he mentions they're going to do all this. Although again, verse 13 is badly translated. It says, "Know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, and although they served them, i.e., although your descendants served these people in this land, yet they will oppress them. They, the people of the land, and we know this is all Egypt. History's told us this is all Egypt." That's in view here. And they will oppress them 400 years. Now, the deal here is, number one, in this sentence, the sentence actually runs, "Know for a certainty that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs 400 years. The rest of it's parenthetical. The flow of the sentence runs down to the 400 years. So, how long are Abraham's descendants in a land that is not theirs? Well, guess what? This starts, Canaan is still not theirs. They're still talked about as aliens and strangers during this time. And so Canaan is not theirs. And as it turns out, you have a situation where Isaac is born. We know that Abraham is 100 years old. Well, this makes our math easier because Abraham was born in 1950. Therefore, Isaac was born in 1850. Rough. You can figure that one out. And then Jacob comes along sometime later. But now Isaac is not, just because he's born in 1850, he does not become the heir until he is 5 years old. And there's a story in Genesis that most people read and they don't understand it and they don't get what's going on. And it was when Sarah has a conniption and throws Hagar out. Because Hagar, the son of Hagar, this little teenager, this little guy, was mocking Isaac, making fun of him. And so Sarah didn't like it, so she had a conniption and threw Hagar out. Well, this is in 1845 B.C. This begins the time that Abraham's heir resided in a land that was not his. That's the kickoff time. That's your terminus a quo, the beginning point you're looking for. It's in 1845. Now, we know that they're going to be strangers in a land that's not theirs till 1445 B.C. if this prophecy is correct. It's correct. 1445 B.C. is the date of the Exodus. And what we find out is that from certain time, that this time is divided almost exactly in half between the time in Canaan, where they're strangers in a land that's not theirs, and the time they're in captivity in Egypt, where they're strangers in a land that is not theirs. But they were not in captivity in Egypt 400 years. There's no way. Those figures just do not work. That's a misinterpretation of this. Well, so the fourth generation refers to the children of the Exodus generation, the conquest generation, who returned to take the land. He said, in the fourth generation, they will return here. Well, that's got to be the conquest generation when they were going to judge the land, because he ties their return with judgment on the Amorites, who were a part of the indigenous population of the land. Because he says, they're not coming back here till then because the iniquity of the Amorites is not complete. In other words, God has to wait for evil to get to a certain point before he's forced to judge it. And he tries to be patient and let people orient to him. He says, here, I'm God. Don't you want to go to heaven? Wouldn't you like to have a life of love and happiness and orientation to me and all the blessings that go with that? And everybody says, no, thanks, but I'm busy. Well, okay. So he waits, though. He's patient. He gives people a chance to orient. And then if they don't orient, well, eventually he drops a hammer on. That's just going to happen. So we know the Exodus generation dies off. And the conquest generation, they begin the conquest 40 years after the Exodus in 1445. Therefore, it begins in 1405. And it lasts about 6 years. It takes them about 6 years to conquer that whole land. It's 1399 or so is where they finally do this. And so so they come back in the fourth generation. We know that's got to refer to the children of the Exodus generation. So that doesn't refer to the Exodus generation. And Moses is a generation before that. So Amram, Moses' father, is the generation before that. And again, we have certain things that we know about Amram, but we don't have specific dates for it. And so we have to fit him into a particular geographic area, but we don't have, the Bible doesn't provide specific dates on him, where other things can be figured out. Well, two, the four generations begins with Amram. That's Moses' father. The first generation born in captivity in Egypt. Move to Moses' generation, the Exodus generation, and concludes with the conquest generation, or conclude. The four generations conclude with that one. Three, the biblical chronology, which indicates that the Jews were in Egypt from 1660 to 1445 B.C., is 215 years. But one cannot fix the birth of Amram since that information is not provided. I can tell you right now, you can go study this all you want, you'll never figure it out. Because the information's not there. It's not because you're not smart enough, it's just because the information isn't there. It's not stated. So we got that. Well, so assuming Amram. Okay, now let's make an assumption here, because we're going to have to start working with some numbers. Assume that Amram is born on the day of the descent into Egypt. Highly unlikely, but let's assume. We got to have his birth somewhere. I mean, he had to be born. That much we can say. This would provide a generation that is 53.75 years long. And five, assuming he was born as late as 20 years after the descent, it only shortens the average of a generation to 48.75 years. With 50, we would say, let's say 50 is a good average. In this particular prophecy, 50 is a good average. You have four generations, and we know that we have the time frame in which they have to fit, and it's about 200 years, a little over, but it's about 200 years. So 4 divided by 200, 200 divided by 4 is 50. That's easy enough. Okay. Hopefully you can see all that. Well, the next pertinent reference is found in Matthew's genealogy, which is not a strict genealogy. Now, that's an important point, and I mentioned that. Matthew omits generations to serve his purpose. But so he's not saying, I'm trying to give you an entire, complete genealogy of the Jews. I'm not. But this is a genealogy. But the information was adapted for his own purposes and provides us three series of 14 generations. Well, one, the first series begins with the birth of Isaac in 1850 BC and continues to the birth of David. In about 1040 BC, David's born. 1040 or 1050, I'd have to double check that, but I think it was 1040, but it might have been 1050 even. Which encompasses 810 years for 14 generations, or about 57 years per generation. Okay, that's just easy. You can just do the math. It's not hard to figure out. Two, the second series begins with the birth of Solomon in about 994 BC and continues to the time of the deportation to Babylon in 597 BC. And the deportation is not the same as the desolation of Jerusalem that occurred in 586. The deportation occurred about 11 years before that. This is when Daniel and them were taken. Daniel and the three asbestos Jews, as we call them. Because you can't burn them. So this provides a generation that is slightly over 28 years in length. Okay, well, obviously, big difference. The third series begins with the deportation of Babylon in 597 BC to the birth of Christ, 3 BC. And encompasses only 13 generations and provides an average for 45.6 years for a generation. Taking the entire genealogy, which would encompass 41 generations, we would have a generation that lasts for 45.05 years. That's just the math of it. And by the way, well, if people want to argue with this, with other factors, I will tell you that this is limited to the biblical data. I make no apologies for that, that I don't look for outside sources to justify this, that these are the numbers in the Bible itself. And so when we consider what the Bible considers to be a generation, I think we would have to look at the biblical numbers and see what they are. That makes sense to me. Therefore, taking all these generations into account and making the appropriate calculations, the result is a generation that averages 44.5 years biblically. Biblically. The biblical data is what the interpreter must use in these chronological matters. That's my assumption, that you have to use the biblical data, that you can't just provide a bunch of other data and then say, well, I'm going to do this. You have to use what's here. So, okay, however, there is no biblical passage that definitely sets forth the length of a generation. The closest we have is that one I read you in Numbers there about 40 years and I'm going to kill that generation off. That he took 40 years to do it. And so 40 has been viewed as a good average number for a generation. Well, with everything I know about the Bible, I would say it's got to be between about 40 and 44 years as the generation. That's about as far as you can stretch it. That's just with the biblical data. So again, one is unwise to dogmatically assert. If you don't have a verse that will prove it, dogmatic assertions are stupid. Because anybody can get up and do that. I dogmatically assert it. Where's your verse? I don't have one. And so while we do things like, for instance, I don't have a verse that says Satan's out on appeal. But I have enough other biblical information that makes that the only reasonable conclusion as to why he's been tried, sentence has been passed, and yet he's still free. I got to answer those questions. So while I don't have a strict verse on that one, I have so much other biblical information that that's the only assumption one can reasonably make, is that Satan's been, has appealed his verdict.
Well, we don't have a verse. You got to be awfully careful.
This is consistent with the fact that Jesus Christ made it plain that he was not providing specific dates. I mean, that's another whole thing. Anybody that's trying to work out a dating scheme for this is ipso facto at odds with Jesus himself. Because he said, of the day and the hour, no man knows. And not the angels, and not the Son. So if God's withheld this information from the angels, he's withheld it from his incarnated Son, but he's going to give it to you, right? No, I don't see that. I don't see that at all. The whole tenor of this smacks against the fact that God's going to give it to anybody. The fact is, nobody knows, and that's the way it's meant to be. So he made it plain that anybody wanted to do this was essentially not on solid ground with him. They're certainly not in sync with... And he didn't seem to appear to be too concerned about the fact that he didn't know this. So why wouldn't he have been? Well, apparently it doesn't matter. Of that day, an hour, no one knows. No one knows. And I don't think anybody knows till yet. But this is the problem with the date setters. They want to set a date. They want to figure this out. I know the rapture is going to be in 2011, 2012, 2013, 2021, 2027. You don't know when it's going to be. But why don't you just accept that and quit trying to do this stuff? You're wasting your time. Can you imagine the endless hours people put together to try to devise these schemes, and what happens to their divine good production during this time? Are they out applying or doing what they're supposed to be doing? Nah. They're wasting endless hours trying to work out something they aren't supposed to work out in the first place. So you've got all that, and you've got this situation where, biblically, you can't really make, to my thinking, any much more than an argument for 44 years for a generation. So if the fig tree was the sign of national Israel in 1948, then by 1992, we should have seen the resolution of all of this. That's 44 years. And even if you want to make it 50, add another 6 to it, that's 1998. At the latest. Now we pushed a generation to 60 years. Now we're pushing it to 65 years. There's no biblical evidence for this model. And that's what I want you to see, is that, number one, this problem with the generation has been problematic. And the fact, and I hope I'm not the only one, that recognize we keep having to stretch this in order to make it fit our preconceived idea, which, as it turns out, was wrong. And that's just the deal you have to acknowledge. Little egg on your face, and so be it. Okay, well, we're going to stop there today. We will be ready to move on with major point 6 here next time. But it is the time of the year where at least one quarter, where we celebrate the Lord's table. So we will get all that in position. Thank you, Heavenly Father, for the opportunity to study these things. May God, the Holy Spirit, help us to reflect on these matters and to see the truth in these things. For we ask it in Christ's name. Amen.